When did you start bringing everything downstairs, just so you don't have to go back upstairs again? Joint Relief Institute. Move better, live better without surgery. Call 708-888-0000.
You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books. David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, writes in his new book, The Road to Character, that there are two sets of virtues. There are the resume virtues, and then there are the eulogy virtues. And he says we spend too much time on the former and not enough on the latter. David Brooks, welcome.
It's good to be with you.
All right, so tell me about this. It's not the fact that we're bad people now. It's just that we've changed our focus. We look too much maybe on the surface, not enough into the deeper, long-lasting virtues. You say that we're not worse than we were years and years ago. We're just sort of morally inarticulate these days.
It's a competitive world, and so we spend a lot more time thinking about our career. We've got Facebook and social media. We spend a lot more time promoting ourselves. And I just think we've become much more interested in career, and we all want to have good character. We all want to be good people. But sort of the language to talk about it has gone away. And I saw a study of the Harvard Education School. They asked 10,000 junior high school students, do your parents care more about your grades or whether you're kind? And 80% said, my parents care more about grades. And so we've just become very focused on achievement. And the stuff that matters most, which is what they say at your eulogy, that stuff we've sort of left that by the side of the road.
But I suppose there's a ground in the middle, right? There's a spot. I mean, you write about Frances Perkins and her mother, and I think it was her father who would have never told her that she was, you know, a beautiful young woman. Her mother said, wear this hat because you've got an oddly shaped face.
Yeah.
You know, that just wouldn't happen now,
right?
Where my daughter's beautiful each and every day, right? So so that's the other extreme. But somewhere in the middle is probably the right place to be.
Yeah, and so, I think one of the reasons the culture changed was there are large groups of people, notably women and minorities, who were taught to think too lowly of themselves, and their egos had to be raised, their aspirations had to be raised. But, the book is a lot of it is about people of great humility, like Frances Perkins or Dorothy Day or George Marshall, the Secretary of State. And humility is not thinking lowly of yourself. It's having accurate awareness of yourself, knowing where you're really strong, but also knowing where you're really weak. And those people spend a lot of their time focusing on what's my core weakness, whether it's vanity or ego or selfishness or temper. And they beat their core weakness. And character is really built by beating your core weakness.
So you set out to find people of moral virtue. You talk about identifying the weakness. Eisenhower was his anger, right?
Yeah, he had a terrible temper problem. And even in World War II, he was up nights, anxiety attacks, blood pressure spiking. And he knew he couldn't lead from a position of anger. So he built a cheerful persona. And some of the things he did were kind of shallow, but they worked. The people he hated, he would write their names down on a piece of paper, and then he'd rip up the paper and throw it in the garbage can just as a way to purge his anger.
So he recognized that his weakness was his anger.
Yeah.
And your argument, I think, is that today we would have a hard time recognizing our own weakness. Or I mean, we might find it, but it would take a little looking.
Yeah, I think we're less inclined to look at it. And then how to beat it, how to turn the point is that external success, whether you make it in the world, which is a great thing, is built by being better than other people at external tasks. But internal character is built by being better than yourself. Self-respect is not self-esteem. Self-respect is the ability to know that I defeated my weakness. I used to be selfish, but now I'm a little less selfish. And you get self-respect out of that, and you get constancy and integrity.
You lament a little bit that we've lost the word sin.
Yeah. And I understand why we lauded it. A lot of people went to school and sin was used harshly.
Heard it quite a lot.
Yeah. I didn't go to Catholic school, but a lot of people who did tell me that, they heard a lot and it was used sometimes to banish pleasure. But the reason I think it's worth having the word sin is it reminds us that life is a moral occasion and that every decision we make, we're building a soul into something a little better or a little worse. And the second thing I like about sin is a weakness is individual, but sin is collective. We all have the same sins, and we can fight them together. And that's another big message of the book. We've become very individualistic.
Well, I think that's something that's lost on a lot of people, this idea that being sinful is almost being normal or being natural. Right?
Yeah, I think that's the whole point. If you looked at, David Foster Wallace gave a great commencement at Kenyon College. And he said, we don't even think about it, but we look at the whole world like it's in front of us, behind us, beside us. We're just naturally self-centered. And that's just built into the wiring of who we are. We overpraise ourselves a little. We're a little selfish. We're probably a little status hungry.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead, David.
And so recognizing that and being accurate about that is the first step. And then committing to things outside yourself is the second.
So a lot of play a couple of years ago with that commencement address, you are not special.
Yeah.
You're an advocate of that address?
I guess I am, yeah, because there were so many addresses that says, I'm so special, trust your instincts, follow your passion. Somebody did a survey about this. 80% of college graduates don't have a passion. So, like, the answer to your life meaning is not going to be found inside. One of my characters, Frances Perkins, she found her life meaning by, she happened to stumble across a very famous fire, and she watched hundreds of people die. And she found her passion not by looking inside, but by looking at the world and asking what problem really needs solving.
Well, you're using the word passion, but in the book you write vocation.
Yeah.
And which is interesting to me. Explain for me what a vocation is, because I think that's a word that's meaning is lost as well.
Yeah, and a vocation you feel, a career is something you choose, and if it's not working out for you 1 month, you can switch jobs. But a vocation or a calling is something you feel summoned to do, that either God or history or just the circumstances have called you to do this. And it's baked deep into your nature. It's part of your identity. Like a teacher may feel called to be a teacher, and she or he may go years where the profession is really hard and not that satisfying, but she's not going to quit because that's who she is, that's her identity. And so the people in the book really were able to make amazingly strong commitments to their vocations, their callings, to the people they loved, to the philosophies they held.
You cannot choose a vocation?
It chooses you. You feel like, and frankly, I would say that's true of me. You know, I'm a writer, and I can't imagine myself doing anything else. We're sitting here in a studio. Behind you is a picture of Bruce Springsteen.
Right.
And I've had a chance to interview him. He had no plan B. He was called to be a musician. And I do think there's something sort of baked so deep into his identity.
That reminds me, I did an interview once with several musicians from the Chicago Symphony. And they were all lost in their world. I mean, they were delinquent. They were failing in school until they found an instrument.
Yeah. And somehow it's that magic moment when they find something that just feels, oh, yeah, this is who I am.
All right, so you write about these people from the past that you've seen, Frances Perkins, Dorothy Day, and others. I want to hear about this guy, Father Ray.
Well, it's very astute of you to pick that up. He's a guy, I think he was a businessman, African-American guy from Detroit, and he decided being business wasn't satisfying. He became a Catholic priest, and he went to Anacostia, which is a poor neighborhood in D.C., where he now has a parish. I ran across him. I do a show on PBS with a guy named Mark Shields, and Shields introduced me. And just at a luncheon, we were just at some hotel, and he just radiated joy. He was the happiest human being I've ever come across. And, you know, my reaction was, oh, it's so great to be around this guy. I got to be around this guy more. And the second reaction was, you know, I've achieved more success than I thought I ever would, but I haven't achieved that. I want to be more like that guy.
That's the sort of thing we're after?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's great to have a great career, but to feel really fulfilled, to go around as joyful as he is, grateful for the world, helping other people. And so you think about a guy like that, so many people are touched by him. When they are suffering, he's there for them. He's compassionate. He listens to you. And he's going to leave just a great mark on so many people.
Don't you suppose you do that for a lot of people too, David? I mean, let me tell you that you do. I mean, I enjoy watching you on TV or listening to your reasoned approach on radio. So there is that sort. I mean, if you're sitting behind a microphone, so you don't see the sort of joy you bring or the anger maybe you bring people. I don't know, but yeah, you do have a touch.
Anger. Well, thank you. I hope I do. And I'm proud of my career. I'm not ashamed of what I do. But I would also like to – there's one thing doing good in an anonymous way with a lot of people. But there's another thing of being intimate with people and really getting in their lives. And also, I think – having a deep and giving love face-to-face. And both those things are important.
You said something in an NPR interview that maybe it's sort of sparked something. I mean, I'm not really – I'm interested in what you have to say. I'm not that interested in your personal faith.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm interested in the fact that so many people seem to be,
yeah,
now that you've been out on this book tour. Has that been a surprise to you?
It has been a little. I mean, I was raised Jewish, but in the book I have a lot of Christian figures. I have St. Augustine. And I have Dorothy Day. There are some figures in the book who are atheists, George Eliot and George Marshall, maybe agnostic. Dwight Eisenhower is not particularly religious. But there are a couple Christian figures in the book. And so people have taken all the Christian theology I've been reading, and they've sort of interpreted things. I don't talk about it mostly because I do believe in privacy. I mean, I'm an author. I got to be out there a little. But I do think there are certain things that are going on deep inside oneself that if you brought it to the public and you turned it into like a marketing device for your book, you would just trample it and you take something precious and you cheapen it. So I try to talk a little about myself, but not too much.
Well, we started by talking about eulogy virtues versus resume virtues, right? And I wonder if the idea of getting you onto our side is a little bit of the resume virtue and losing the eulogy virtue.
Yeah, you mean religiously?
Yeah, I mean, people want to claim you.
Yeah, it's like a team. We got to win one for the team. But that's not the way faith should be approached.
David Brooks, the name of the book is The Road to Character. It was nice to talk to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure.